Lookings to believe have ways of getting in the way of how thinking sees. Then glories or regrets have some ways of competing, playing like contestants, crowding into minds, not leaving well enough alone is a lesson to learn. And sometimes howling under the moon wears its silence, memorying DNA dreams into living vibrations of remembrance.
Party start down here at CKW 95.9 FM on your dial in Winnipeg. It's plenty jamming this morning, and you will hear messages coming through very, very clearly. We are sorry, and we sympathize with the woman of the university here, University of Winnipeg. The women's soccer has been cancelled for the year. And that is bad for a number of students losing their right to come and finish off themselves in terms of the learning things like becoming somewhat transitioning to professional soccer, especially women's soccer opening up big in North America now. All of this is what they're crying about. I wish I could get somebody. I might get somebody next week to come on and give a rationale on that. Anyhow, we're still on Palestine with that murderous extermination of a whole people, genocide. And we're looking at how the game is being played. People taking credit for an assumed... what should you call it? An assumed peace, or even getting rid of all that murderousness. Well, they're joking around it. So look out. Look out. It's a fantasy world we're living in.
Yeah. Manuela, and you're listening to CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. And the radio show name is called Fantastic Friday. Please come and join us every single Friday morning from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. every Friday morning.
Northern Cree.
And we're here to say that as a province, the people of Manitoba are no longer satisfied with having people live in tents. Today is a day where we commit to a turning point. We're going to work together and ensure that everybody has a place to call home, and importantly, that you have the addictions and mental health services to succeed in living with a roof over your head. So there's two specific announcements that we're making here today. First, we're taking the covers off our provincial homelessness strategy. It's called Your Way Home. And speaking to people who've been living in tents, people who've been out on the streets struggling with addictions and mental health issues or that intergenerational trauma, we are committed to working with you to help you find your way home. And the other big announcement today is that we're hiring one of the MVPs from the sector, Tessa Blakey Whitecloud, who is going to be the quarterback for this strategy at the provincial level. She will be joining the provincial government, and I want to get the title right here because it's very, very important, as the Premier Senior Advisor on Ending Chronic Homelessness. I want to ask the people of Manitoba, how do you feel when you drive along Main Street? How do you feel when you drive down South Pembina? When you drive through communities like Brandon or Thompson or so many other places, and you see somebody who is in the grips of psychosis brought on by substance use, how do you feel when you see fires, either in person or being shared on social media, for people who live in encampments? How do you feel when you see tents underneath bridges or in parks? And regardless of how you answer that question, I know that the thing that everybody agrees on, coming from those feelings, is that we can and we should be doing better. This is a rich country, this place that we love so much called Canada. This is a beautiful province full of wonderful, helping people. And yet for far too long, people have been left behind. They've been left behind without housing. They've been left behind with mental health services. They've been left behind without a path to stay alive and make their way out of an addictions crisis. Speaking to you as somebody who was given a second chance at life, I want to tell you that it is so important that we work together to address this challenge of chronic homelessness. I made good on a second chance, and I have a deep...
Hey everyone, I'm Jess Turner. Make sure you listen to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9 FM every Friday morning, 6 a.m. till 8 a.m. That's way too early for me. Okay, thanks. Bye.
Tell them how you play.
Yes.
Ohio players, fire.
Listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM in Winnipeg. This is my favorite morning wake-up show.
Kindness.
feet deep in love, I know you're like her. Every time I call you up and make you feel like it's just you in my ball. So you can bounce on me if you wanna play that game. Bounce on me like today, what's your last day? Bounce on me like my love is everlasting. Girl, I want it. Bounce on me like ding ding. Bounce on me like we wanna play that like. Bounce on me, wanna be the OCD. Bounce on me, I get the OCD.
Is there someone else? You did do me corny, yo. Every day new story, yo. Say I just they waste my time, cause you don't become someone else. See palava for me, yo. You know they touch my body, yo. It feels good to love somebody and somebody loves you back. But it feels one-sided now. It feels one-sided now. Yes, it's bye to the good times. I'll be gone by the sunrise. I'll be better on my own. I'll be better on my own. Nah, nah. Nobody should call my phone. Nobody should call my phone. Nah, nah. This is my last heartbreak song. This is my last heartbreak song. Nah, nah.
When I'm gone, I make you nervous. If you hurt me, I deserve it. I've been acting foolishly, forgetting what you were. You stopped loving me, I know this. But even chaos serves a purpose. It feels good to love somebody and somebody loves you back. So don't give in till you change mind, cause I'll be here for a lifetime. You don't have to pretend about it, cause it's crystal clear now, now. Guess it's bye to the good times, and I'll be gone by the sunrise.
All the way from South Africa, giving you some beautiful Southern African notes. No Non Baby, together with an assembly from in Winnipeg here, and recorded right here in Winnipeg. Listen to the cross rhythms. Listen to the cross cultural identifications.
Po.
Oh,
Amanda.
I'm Dale Rufus, and you're listening to Fantastic Fridays on CKUW 95.9, my favorite Friday morning wake-up show.
This is for my city dwellers, my storytellers, my soundscapers, music makers, and my dreamers of dreams. This is for the beat layers, the street sayers, the graph writers, and the painters. This is for the crate keepers, the image freezers, the lens seekers, and the photogs. This is for the spinners, the rewinders, drop the needle, pull it back, and come againers. This is for the movers, the body users, the kinetic acrobatic defying gravity provers. This is for the filmmakers, the actors, the activators, my sculptors, and my can sprayers. This is for the da-da-dubbers, the dancers, the scribers, the scholars. This is for the freestylers, my improvisers, my poetical, lyrical, spiritual vocalizers. This is for my speechifiers, for the visionaries, for the bridge builders, the chain breakers, the power takers. This is for the door crashers, my drum beaters, the call to action taker to the streeters. For my behind the sceners, my planners, my finders, our on task and right on timers. For our organizers, our survivors, our motivators, and our strivers. This is for the uplifters and the uprisers. This is for you, our ancestors. This is for you, our people blessers, our children, for our vision, for our villages, our hoods, our nations, our truths. This is for our culture, for our generation. This is for our creator and our creation. This is for our inner being and our outer, for our say it louder, big and prouder. This is for the art, for the word. This is for the sound. This is for the power.
And conscientizing of I and I people. Blessed love motion.
You wanted me.
Fantastic Friday morning. At the beginning of the year, everything will become more clear. Can it? It will.
Something
love and kindness.
You told me stayed in my head all night long. You wanted me to love you when you said simply reach out and touch me. My love is in your hand. Feel me. I want to hear the fire. Yeah.
Stephanie Mills, the genre of some of the greats that go on by. Beautiful.
Hey, hey, you're listening to Fantastic Friday on CKUW 95.9 FM. Ka-chow.
Me know it name murder me wrote and me no take back me chat. Shuffle the date me and the queen in a day park. Look how me cute and sexy like that. And me plant the can so no better watch that. Show me step up in a life them won't forgive me a fight. Show me look cute and them no look too right. They call and need to over me man a fight. And that now one no time in a them life. Me no cut up again model every time. Absolute niceness coming with pair rhyme. First class dress code and your style a lick.
quality. My feet come back quick.
Hi everyone, my name is Belaine Osman. I'm a student here at the U of W. My students actually call me Madame Oz. Just letting you know, CKUW has an awesome show called Fantastic Friday, and you guys should listen to it. Stay tuned.
Well, here it is. It's no secret, but we're packaging it to put it out to you because you wouldn't hear it ordinarily.
Think you where you come from?
Yeah, man.
As long as you're a black man,
a black woman or a black child.
No mind your nationality. You have got the identity
and perspicacity.
Cause if you come from Clarendon,
it don't matter.
And if you come from Portland,
it don't matter.
And if you come from West
Africa, it really don't matter. Because coming to you all the way from West Africa in the country called Nigeria is the brother they call Prince Ogona to give you news and views from Africa. Prince Ogona, forward and payaka.
Yes, good morning, West Africa, and good morning to all our listeners. Unukedu, kekwan, and greetings from Africa. Today's first piece comes from Democracy Now, where Seth Anzika, a professor of Jewish-Muslim relations at University College London, explains while on one hand, Qatar believed that Israel's treatment of Palestinians constituted apartheid far worse than what he had seen in South Africa. On the other hand, his deep Christian faith made him fundamentally sympathetic to religious beliefs, framing Israel as a Jewish homeland.
I think primarily the biggest lesson is that when he came into office, he was the first U.S. president to talk about the idea of a Palestinian homeland alongside his commitment to Israeli security. And that was an enormous change from what had come before and what's come since. And I think that the way we understand Carter's legacy should very much be oriented around the very deep commitment he had to justice and a resolution of the Palestinian question alongside his commitment to Israel, which derived very much from his Southern Baptist faith. Well, I think one of the biggest misunderstandings about the legacy of Camp David is that this is not at all what Carter had intended or had hoped for when he came into office. He actually had a much more comprehensive vision of peace in the Middle East that included a resolution of the Palestinian component, but also peace with Syria, with Jordan. And he came up with some of these ideas, developed them with Cyrus Vance, his Secretary of State, and Zbigniew Brzezinski, his National Security Advisor. And in developing those ideas, which came out in 1977 in a very closely held memo that was not widely shared inside the administration, he actually talked about return of refugees, he talked about the status of Jerusalem, and he desired very much to think about the different components of the regional settlement as part of an overall vision. This was in contrast to Henry Kissinger's attitude of piecemeal diplomacy that had preceded him in the aftermath of the 1973 war. So we can understand Carter in this way very much as a departure and somebody who understood the value and the necessity of contending with these much broader regional dynamics. Now, the reasons why this ended up with a far more limited but very significant bilateral peace treaty between Egypt and Israel had a lot to do both with the election of Israeli Prime Minister Menachem Begin in 1977, as well as the position of Egyptian President Anwar al-Sadat, and also the role of the Palestinians and the PLO. But what people don't quite recall or understand is that Camp David and the agreement towards the peace treaty was in many ways a compromise, or in Brzezinski's view, was a real departure from what had been the intention. And that gap between what people had hoped for within the administration and what ended up emerging in 1979 with the Egyptian-Israeli peace treaty also was tethered very much to the perpetuation of Palestinian statelessness. So if we want to understand why and how Palestinians have been deprived of sovereignty or remain stateless to this day, we have to go back to think about the impact of Camp David itself.
interesting that Sadat would be assassinated years later in Egypt. When Carter was on the plane with Nixon and Ford, that's when they say that cemented his relationship with Ford, while they hardly talked to Nixon at all. But if you could also comment on President Carter and post-President Carter. I mean, the fact that he wrote this book, Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid, using the word Palestine, using the word apartheid to refer to the occupied territories. I remember him chasing him down the hall at the Democratic convention when he was supposed to speak. This was the Obama Democratic convention. And it ended up he didn't speak. And I chased him and Roseland because—
Remember that in 1977, there was a very famous speech that he gave in Clinton, Massachusetts, talking about a Palestinian homeland. And that raised huge hackles, both in the American Jewish community, amongst American Jewish leaders who were very uncomfortable and were already distrustful of a Southern Democrat and his views on Israel, but also Cold War conservatives who were quite hawkish and felt that he was far too close to engaging with the Soviet Union. And so both of those constituencies were very, very opposed to his attitude and his approach on the Palestinian issue. And I think we can see echoes of that in how he then was treated after his presidency, when much of his activism and much of his engagement on the question of Palestine, to my view, derived from a sense of frustration and regret about what he was not able to achieve in the Camp David Accords. And his commitment stemmed from the same values that he had been shaped by early on, a sense of viewing the Palestinian issue through the same lens as civil rights and the same lens as what he experienced in the South, which is often what his biographers have explained, where his views and approach towards the Palestinians came from, but also a particularly close relationship to biblical views around Israel and Zionism that he was very, very much committed to Israeli security as a result. And that was never something that he let go of, even if you look closely at his work in Palestine, Peace, Not Apartheid. Some of his views on Israel are actually quite closely aligned with positions that many in the Jewish community would feel comfortable with. The fact that people criticized and attacked him for that, I think, speaks to the taboo of talking about what's happening or what has happened in the context of Israel and Palestine in the same kind of language as disenfranchisement around a race in apartheid South Africa. And of course, as Carter said in the interview you just ran that you had done with him when the book came out, the situation is far worse in actuality with what is happening vis-a-vis Israel's treatment of Palestinians.
Our second piece here also comes from Democracy Now!, where Abu Safiya's friend and former colleague, Dr. John Kala, a co-founder of the medical humanitarian aid group Med Global, speaks to us about Abu Safiya's tireless commitment to his medical work while suffering the pain, trauma, and tragedy of Israel's war on Gaza. Stay tuned.
I'm sorry to say that we really don't know much more than has been stated. On December 27th, after the third round of attacks on Kamal Adwan starting back in 2023, after the third round where the hospital was actually destroyed, Dr. Abu Safiya was taken into custody. It was a horrible picture, but it was also a picture of unbelievable bravery. We also have Dr. Abu Safiya would be the first to say that his position is no better than any of the other healthcare workers that have been detained. There's been 500 healthcare workers that have been killed. There are still at least 250 doctors in detention. We ourselves, Med Global, have eight of our healthcare workers in detention. Dr. Abu Safiya is the most prominent, and obviously we're here to talk about him because he is the shining light with regards to all that is good about and noble about our profession in Gaza. When we started our project, Med Global, in in 2019. It was in the form of capacity building and resiliency building, capacity building done by education. Kamala One Hospital was the pediatric hub that would feed the tertiary care hospital, the most significant hospital in Gaza, namely Shifa. We were in the process of helping train pediatricians, helping train other healthcare personnel, helping staff and supply Shifa. That was the plan. After October 2023, that plan was no longer operative. Shifa was destroyed. Everyone had to abandon it. Dr. Abu Safia stood alone in keeping Kamal Adwan Hospital open. There was his bravery stood out. He kept the hospital open and kept the hospital functioning for pediatrics. And actually, as things moved on into 2024, they needed to expand their services beyond pediatrics because it became one of the only hospitals serving Jabalia refugee camp and serving the north. So it didn't just deal with pediatrics, it expanded its services.
The response to what's happening to all of these doctors, like Dr. Borsch, who was found naked and dead at one of the prisons, I believe at Ofer Prison, where it has been mentioned. You heard Dr. Abu Safia's son saying he believes he's at Ofer. That was reported in May.
Yes. Yeah. No one knows for sure. Well, I mean, he hasn't had his moment in court. It's been delayed at least twice. We are trying in all of our capacities to find out not just where he is, but to see him and to hopefully get him released. Any of the hostage deals that are on the table need to deal directly also with the healthcare workers and the other Palestinians, the 9,000 Palestinians that are held as prisoner. I'd like to say this about Dr. Abu Safia, though. When I was with him in March, he told me three things. One spoke to his basic humanness, which was that he was very happy that I was there. I brought some minimal supplies. We were permitted to go north. We were one of the first international groups that were permitted to go north. And we brought minimal supplies, those things that we could put into an SUV. But he received them as if they were manna from heaven. He was very sad that we needed to set up a nutrition stabilization center, but very proud and very happy that it would be done at Kamal Adwan Hospital. So there was his basic humanness. The second thing was that his just friendship. I was going back in May to spend a month there helping establish the nutrition stabilization center. I'm a pediatrician also, so I'd be able to also work in the hospital. So he was very happy that I would be coming back. I would meet his family. And third, though, and most important for this discussion, is he told me directly that there were two things he would absolutely not do. He would, first of all, not abandon his hospital. And the second and even most important to that, he would not abandon his colleagues and or his patients. And these are acts of bravery and acts of humility. These are the components that all real heroes characterize. And he is, we overuse that term, and we've overused it a lot in the past decade. He is a true hero. He's not a heroic on the level of Viktor Frankl. He's heroic on the level of Mandela, Barghouti. All of them manifest these two traits.
And in the midst of all this, he lost his son. As he remained
for
in Gaza.
For all of this, his son was killed. He himself was wounded. He was abducted, arrested. And then finally, his mom even died. These are things that work to humiliate and remove agency. His bravery is a supreme act of resistance. And what no oppressor will tolerate is that level of resistance. Remember, this was the third time since October 23 that Kamal Adwan was attacked. He stood alone each time defending it and keeping it open. Finally, there was direct destruction of the hospital itself. He was called, finally, the doctors were arrested, patients were removed, a hospital was attacked and pretty much burned. And you see that unbelievable picture of him walking up in his white coat, up a hill of destruction to a tank waiting for him, and he walking into the tank, greeting his captors. This is a man who has a level of humanity way beyond anything that I could ever hope for.
Hi, we have another piece also from Democracy Now! Where we speak with journalist Stephen Thrasher and Afif Nasoli about the new report for The Intercept, which examines how queer HIV-positive Palestinians are struggling to survive in Gaza with limited access to medication due to Israel's siege and ongoing attacks on the territory.
So this young man reached out to me in March and basically had found my reporting online, on Instagram. I had been sort of helping queer people in Palestine, sort of amplifying their voices. He reached out in a DM and said, listen, I've seen your work, and I'm queer and I'm Gazan, and I'd really like to talk to you about something and clear my mind. After a bunch of voice notes back and forth, he kind of revealed that he had contracted HIV about 10 years ago, and that he was essentially running out of medication because of the genocide. And it was hard for him to sort of ask for help, but it was obvious that he needed help. He was in northern Gaza at the time. I changed his name, obviously, for his protection, and he would tell me things about his cats, his art, his mom, his brother, his belief in God, his queerness, and all of these really deep things, but he never really asked for help until things were getting worse and worse, and he was always sort of 1 or 2 months away from medication. He was getting medication from different sources in northern Gaza. Like the group GLIA, who was trying to coordinate medication for all sorts of different kinds of people there. But we found out that, you know, depots were being targeted by Israeli airstrikes. There was limited supply. He was getting medication from a doctor's brother who had taken medication and put it in his house. It was always just sort of a race against time. And over the summer, his brother would, like, brave the streets. I remember in July, his brother sort of braved the streets and went and sort of picked up more medication, but it was still very limited in amount. And we discussed kind of going further into publishing a story, so we started recording our conversations. In October, his house was targeted. He barely survived. His mother and his brother and him were displaced. It became extremely important to get this story out as soon as possible. Dr. Thrasher reached out to me sort of almost divinely in alignment. It just felt so right. And he said, listen, this story is really important. Let's listen to some of these tapes that you've got. And we started pitching it out. In the interim, Tariq Lubani of GLIA had reached out to me.
A Palestinian-Canadian physician.
Yes, the Palestinian-Canadian physician with GLIA reached out to me to basically say, listen, I've seen your stuff. I've seen this story. I want to help in any way I can. It was really hard because there were so many times in which Tariq tried to get medication and got confiscated at one point. His NGO got banned at one point because of appearing in an article in the New York Times. It was just like bad news after one thing after the next, but ES was simply unwavering in his faith.
He walks with a walker.
He's confined to a walker because he also contracted neurosyphilis. He had years on and off of care in Gaza. There was a lot of sort of stigma from his family, a lot of complications sort of with shame. But in the same token, there were a lot of doctors in Gaza who helped him unconditionally, a lot of people who really saved his life. So in any place, like, there's homophobia and there's also unconditional love.
What does queering the map mean?
Queering the map is a resource that I found early on in the genocide, around October or November, where there are people around the world who upload sort of messages to each other just about where they're at, where they are in the world, and what their experience is. And I, you know, sort of went to Gaza and I went to the West Bank and I started uploading messages that I had found. And that actually brought in a lot of queer people that I started speaking to in Gaza. This is not the only person in Gaza that I'm speaking to. There's trans people in Gaza. There's people who are gay men, lesbian. Obviously, we know that. But it's very helpful when you have the stories to amplify, because then you can really give specificity.
Has ES tried to get out of Gaza?
He really didn't try for a really long time. He loves Gaza. He loves the beach. He loves his home.
He actually was a student in high school here in the United States.
Yes, he was. He had gotten a full scholarship, not only to high school, but then later for some years in college before he contracted and decided he couldn't handle like being HIV positive alone without his family and away from Gaza. So he decided to go back. And I think now he would, I think in the later stages of our conversations, evacuation seemed a lot more compelling to him. But again, he loves Gaza. He doesn't want to leave, but he has to.
This last piece also from Dem Gossi Now, they host a roundtable on the planned Gaza ceasefire. They host it with former Israeli peace negotiator Dana Levi of the U.S. Middle East Project, Gazan analyst Mohammed Shahada of the UN Mediterranean Human Rights Monitor, and journalist Jeremy Scahill of JobSite News, who will get to listen to at least some of it.
I mean, the painful thing is that we are talking about things today and next year would happen, that we are talking about the same thing, the same losses, or even worse. So today is the anniversary of my friend's Ma'ruf al-Ashqar's killing. He was killed last year, and just 2 months ago, his father was killed in an airstrike. So today is his first anniversary. And we and the city, Beit Lahia, which is next to Jabali, the Jabali refugee camp, is under the Israeli occupation. I mean, now when we talk about the Israeli occupation, we are no longer talking about settlements in the West Bank or, you know, or Palestinian cities occupied by Israel in 1948. But now we can talk about the Israeli occupation of the Gaza Strip, because not only did they expel people, and this is what I'm talking about in my piece about the refugee camp. Not only did they expel people, many, I mean, most people in the Jabal refugee camp have been expelled by the Israeli occupation. They not only expelled these people, but they also blew up the houses in the refugee camp where people used to live for 70 or more years. I mean, the house where my maternal grandparents were born, where they grew up, where they had my mother and her siblings, this house does not exist anymore. And this is really a very devastating thing for refugees. The refugee camp is a place that should have been a temporary place for people. They should be living in the refugee camp until they could return to the houses of their grandparents or their parents or even their own houses in Yaffa, in Haifa, etc. But these people were expelled from the refugee camp. The refugee camp is destroyed, and these people are now living in other newly constructed refugee camps. And when we talk about refugee camps right now in Gaza, these are group of tents that do not protect people from the heat, do not protect people from the Israeli airstrikes. And we watched so many airstrikes that Israel carried out that were targeting tents, especially in the humanitarian zone. So the Jabal refugee camp is the largest of the 8 refugee camps in the Gaza Strip. It was a home for about 120,000 people, all of them refugees from cities and villages close to the Gaza Strip. So it is a very devastating loss for people, not only to lose their friends, to lose their families, to lose their house, but also not to know whether they would be able to return to the refugee camp, which was supposed to be a temporary place. Just imagine, Amy, that you are expelled from your house in Yaffa in 1948, and then you live in a refugee camp, and then this same occupation comes and destroys the refugee camp. Now you are farther and farther from your dream of returning. Now you are dreaming of returning to the refugee camp. So this is really the tragedy of the Palestinian people right now. Something that really devastates my heart is that we are watching these things happening as we are talking. I mean, we have the news that Dr. Hatem Absafi was abducted from inside the hospital. We saw the hospital where he was working burnt and turned into ashes. And we saw the news about the Hind Rajab family and Hind Rajab herself. And we saw doctors and journalists being targeted and killed. So we have all this news, and nothing is changing the world in terms of taking action against Israel, punishing it. Not only, I mean, they did not get the Palestinians their rights, you know, that are guaranteed by international law after 1948. But they are now watching a genocide being perpetrated by the same occupation, which was admitted to the United Nations just 1 year after it was established. Just imagine that it took Israel 1 year to become a member, a full member of the United Nations. And now it's been taking the whole world about 15 months, and we don't know for how many more. It's been taking them a long time even to stop Israel from perpetrating this well-documented genocide. And I would like, Amy, to draw your attention that 1 day after the Israeli army or the Israeli forces denied their position of Dr. Hassan Safiya, 1 day later, the Israeli military spokesperson issued a statement that Dr. Hassan Abu Safiya is with the Israeli army and he is interrogated because he is suspected of being a Hamas member. So this was one thing that was issued 1 day after they denied they're having Dr. Hassan Safiya. So, I mean, this tells you that Israel, whenever they are under pressure, they will succumb. They will change their minds. They will say, oh, yeah, we have him, and he's under interrogation. He's a suspected Hamas general. He's a Hamas general. He's not even Hamas. He's not only Hamas. He's a Hamas general. He's a very, very big guy in Hamas, you know, a doctor who is working with the patients, who refused to leave them, who was injured, whose son was killed. He could leave Gaza any day, because he has a Kazakhstani citizenship. And I would like to draw your attention to another thing, which is that the director of Al Awda Hospital, Dr. Ahmed Mhanna, has been abducted by the Israeli forces from inside the Al Awda Hospital for 350 days. And there is no information about this doctor. I mean, the world started to pay attention and to advocate on behalf of Dr. Hassan Safiya, because, you know, he had some reports, he had an Instagram page, he has been talking about the situation, so people knew him. So that's why people want him to be out, you know, because they feel like they knew him in person. But this Dr. Ahmed Mhanna, and this is the case of about hundreds of other people, these people, no one knows about them. You know, we haven't seen, I mean, I've never seen Dr. Ahmed Mhanna. I've never seen a video of him. But he's a doctor. He's the director of the Al Awda Hospital, and he's been abducted for about 350 days, about a year. And there is no news about him, and no one talks about him. And this is the case of so many people that we don't know about until they are dead, just like Dr. Adnan Al-Bursh. He was abducted from the same hospital, Al Awda Hospital. And the people paid attention to him when he died, and people, oh, yeah, yes. I mean, we don't want to die. We don't want to suffer for people or for governments to sympathize with us and say, oh, yes, we need him, bring him back. He is innocent. No, everyone in Gaza is innocent.
Yeah, man. Greetings, Ibrahim. Good morning to you.
Good morning. Sound is not good.
Oh, how is it? Lousy?
No, I don't know what is going on.
Mm-hmm. I'm hearing you clearly.
Oh, okay. If you hear me clearly, because I don't really hear you clearly.
I am hearing you clearly.
So, okay.
Mm-hmm. You could proceed from where you were at last week or where you want to be this week.